from Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Freedom itself was attacked this morning by a faceless coward, and freedom will be defended. I want to reassure the American people that the full resources of the federal government are working to assist local authorities to save lives and to help the victims of these attacks. Make no mistake, the United States will hunt down and punish those responsible for these cowardly acts. I've been in regular contact with the Vice President, Secretary of Defense, the National Security Team, and my cabinet. We have taken all appropriate security precautions to protect the American people. Our military at home and around the world is on high alert status, and we have taken the necessary security precautions to continue the functions of your government. We have been in touch with the leaders of Congress and with world leaders to assure them that we will do whatever is necessary to protect America and Americans. I ask the American people to join me in saying a thanks for all the folks who have been fighting hard to rescue our fellow citizens, and to join me in saying a prayer for the victims and their families. The resolve of our great nation is being tested, but make no mistake, we will show the world that we will pass this test. God bless.
That was then President George W. Bush on the morning of September 11th, 2001. Thursday marked 13 years since hijacked airplanes, which crashed into the World Trade Center towers in New York and the Pentagon in Washington, kicked off a chain of events that, in the main, continues to play out to this day. These include the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria, Somalia, and Sudan, to name a few, as well as the establishment of what some have called the architecture of a police state, beginning with the creation of the Department of Homeland Security and the passage of the so-called Patriot Act and other unprecedented rollbacks of the constitutional rights of Americans. This was President Bush as he spoke to the nation in the evening of September 11th, 2001. His words foretold the coming years of war without end in a world, he said, was divided between good and evil.
Good evening. Today, our fellow citizens, our way of life, our very freedom came under attack in a series of deliberate and deadly terrorist acts. The victims were in airplanes or in their offices, secretaries, businessmen and women, military and federal workers, moms and dads, friends and neighbors. Thousands of lives were suddenly ended by evil, despicable acts of terror. The pictures of airplanes flying into buildings, fires burning, huge structures collapsing, have filled us with disbelief, terrible sadness, and a quiet, unyielding anger. These acts of mass murder were intended to frighten our nation into chaos and retreat. But they have failed. Our country is strong. A great people has been moved to defend a great nation. Terrorist attacks can shake the foundations of our biggest buildings, but they cannot touch the foundation of America. These acts shatter steel, but they cannot dent the steel of American resolve. America was targeted for attack because we're the brightest beacon for freedom and opportunity in the world, and no one will keep that light from shining. Today, our nation saw evil, the very worst of human nature. And we responded with the best of America, with the daring of our rescue workers, with the caring for strangers and neighbors who came to give blood and help in any way they could. Immediately following the first attack, I implemented our government's emergency response plans. Our military is powerful, and it's prepared. Our emergency teams are working in New York City and Washington, D.C. to help with local rescue efforts. Our first priority is to get help to those who have been injured and to take every precaution to protect our citizens at home and around the world from further attacks. The functions of our government continue without interruption. Federal agencies in Washington, which had to be evacuated today, are reopening for essential personnel tonight and will be open for business tomorrow. Our financial institutions remain strong, and the American economy will be open for business as well. The search is underway for those who are behind these evil acts. I've directed the full resources of our intelligence and law enforcement communities to find those responsible and to bring them to justice. We will make no distinction between the terrorists who committed these acts and those who harbor them. I appreciate so very much the members of Congress who have joined me in strongly condemning these attacks. And on behalf of the American people, I thank the many world leaders who have called to offer their condolences and assistance. America and our friends and allies join with all those who want peace and security in the world. And we stand together to win the war against terrorism. Tonight, I ask for your prayers for all those who grieve, for the children whose worlds have been shattered, for all whose sense of safety and security has been threatened. And I pray they will be comforted by a power greater than any of us, spoken through the ages in Psalm 23. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. This is a day when all Americans from every walk of life unite in our resolve for justice and peace. America has stood down enemies before, and we will do so this time. None of us will ever forget this day, yet we go forward to defend freedom and all that is good and just in our world. Thank you. Good night, and God bless America.
One day shy of the 13th anniversary of President Bush making those remarks, President Barack Obama addressed the nation. He, too, was telling the American people and the world to expect more war with no end in sight.
My fellow Americans, tonight I want to speak to you about what the United States will do with our friends and allies to degrade and ultimately destroy the terrorist group known as ISIL. As Commander-in-Chief, my highest priority is the security of the American people. Over the last several years, we have consistently taken the fight to terrorists who threaten our country. We took out Osama bin Laden and much of al-Qaeda's leadership in Afghanistan and Pakistan. We've targeted al-Qaeda's affiliate in Yemen and recently eliminated the top commander of its affiliate in Somalia. We've done so while bringing more than 140,000 American troops home from Iraq and drawing down our forces in Afghanistan, where our combat mission will end later this year. Thanks to our military and counterterrorism professionals, America is safer. Still, we continue to face a terrorist threat. We can't erase every trace of evil from the world, and small groups of killers have the capacity to do great harm. That was the case before 9/11, and that remains true today. And that's why we must remain vigilant as threats emerge. At this moment, the greatest threats come from the Middle East and North Africa, where radical groups exploit grievances for their own gain. And one of those groups is ISIL, which calls itself the Islamic State. Now, let's make two things clear. ISIL is not Islamic. No religion condones the killing of innocents, and the vast majority of ISIL's victims have been Muslim. And ISIL is certainly not a state. It was formerly al-Qaeda's affiliate in Iraq and has taken advantage of sectarian strife and Syria's civil war to gain territory on both sides of the Iraq-Syrian border. It is recognized by no government nor by the people it subjugates. ISIL is a terrorist organization, pure and simple, and it has no vision other than the slaughter of all who stand in its way. In a region that has known so much bloodshed, these terrorists are unique in their brutality. They execute captured prisoners. They kill children. They enslave, rape, and force women into marriage. They threatened a religious minority with genocide. And in acts of barbarism, they took the lives of two American journalists, Jim Foley and Stephen Sotloff. So ISIL poses a threat to the people of Iraq and Syria and the broader Middle East, including American citizens, personnel, and facilities. If left unchecked, these terrorists could pose a growing threat beyond that region, including to the United States. While we have not yet detected specific plotting against our homeland, ISIL leaders have threatened America and our allies. Our intelligence community believes that thousands of foreigners, including Europeans and some Americans, have joined them in Syria and Iraq. Trained and battle-hardened, these fighters could try to return to their home countries and carry out deadly attacks. I know many Americans are concerned about these threats. Tonight, I want you to know that the United States of America is meeting them with strength and resolve. Last month, I ordered our military to take targeted action against ISIL to stop its advances. Since then, we've conducted more than 150 successful airstrikes in Iraq. These strikes have protected American personnel and facilities, killed ISIL fighters, destroyed weapons, and given space for Iraqi and Kurdish forces to reclaim key territory. These strikes have also helped save the lives of thousands of innocent men, women, and children. But this is not our fight alone. American power can make a decisive difference, but we cannot do for Iraqis what they must do for themselves. Nor can we take the place of Arab partners in securing their region. And that's why I've insisted that additional U.S. action depended upon Iraqis forming an inclusive government, which they have now done in recent days. So tonight, with a new Iraqi government in place, and following consultations with allies abroad and Congress at home, I can announce that America will lead a broad coalition to roll back this terrorist threat. Our objective is clear. We will degrade and ultimately destroy ISIL through a comprehensive and sustained counterterrorism strategy. First, we will conduct a systematic campaign of airstrikes against these terrorists. Working with the Iraqi government, we will expand our efforts beyond protecting our own people and humanitarian missions so that we're hitting ISIL targets as Iraqi forces go on offense. Moreover, I've made it clear that we will hunt down terrorists who threaten our country wherever they are. That means I will not hesitate to take action against ISIL in Syria as well as Iraq. This is a core principle of my presidency. If you threaten America, you will find no safe haven. Second, we will increase our support to forces fighting these terrorists on the ground. In June, I deployed several hundred American service members to Iraq to assess how we can best support Iraqi security forces. Now that those teams have completed their work and Iraq has formed a government, we will send an additional 475 service members to Iraq. As I've said before, these American forces will not have a combat mission. We will not get dragged into another ground war in Iraq. But they are needed to support Iraqi and Kurdish forces with training, intelligence, and equipment. We'll also support Iraq's efforts to stand up National Guard units to help Sunni communities secure their own freedom from ISIL's control. Across the border in Syria, we have ramped up our military assistance to the Syrian opposition. Tonight, I call on Congress again to give us additional authorities and resources to train and equip these fighters. In the fight against ISIL, we cannot rely on an Assad regime that terrorizes its own people, a regime that will never regain the legitimacy it has lost. Instead, we must strengthen the opposition as the best counterweight to extremists like ISIL, while pursuing the political solution necessary to solve Syria's crisis once and for all. Third, We will continue to draw on our substantial counterterrorism capabilities to prevent ISIL attacks. Working with our partners, we will redouble our efforts to cut off its funding, improve our intelligence, strengthen our defenses, counter its warped ideology, and stem the flow of foreign fighters into and out of the Middle East. And in 2 weeks, I will chair a meeting of the UN Security Council to further mobilize the international community around this effort. Fourth, we will continue to provide humanitarian assistance to innocent civilians who've been displaced by this terrorist organization. This includes Sunni and Shia Muslims who are at grave risk, as well as tens of thousands of Christians and other religious minorities. We cannot allow these communities to be driven from their ancient homelands. So this is our strategy. And in each of these four parts of our strategy, America will be joined by a broad coalition of partners. Already, allies are flying planes with us over Iraq, sending arms and assistance to Iraqi security forces and the Syrian opposition, sharing intelligence, and providing billions of dollars in humanitarian aid. Secretary Kerry was in Iraq today, meeting with the new government and supporting their efforts to promote unity. And in the coming days, he will travel across the Middle East and Europe to enlist more partners in this fight, especially Arab nations who can help mobilize Sunni communities in Iraq and Syria to drive these terrorists from their lands. This is American leadership at its best. We stand with people who fight for their own freedom, and we rally other nations on behalf of our common security and common humanity. My administration has also secured bipartisan support for this approach here at home. I have the authority to address the threat from ISIL, but I believe we are strongest as a nation when the President and Congress work together. So I welcome congressional support for this effort in order to show the world that Americans are united in confronting this danger. Now, it will take time to eradicate a cancer like ISIL. And any time we take military action, there are risks involved, especially to the servicemen and women who carry out these missions. But I want the American people to understand how this effort will be different from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. It will not involve American combat troops fighting on foreign soil. This counterterrorism campaign will be waged through a steady, relentless effort to take out ISIL wherever they exist using our air power and our support for partners' forces on the ground. This strategy of taking out terrorists who threaten us while supporting partners on the front lines is one that we have successfully pursued in Yemen and Somalia for years, and it is consistent with the approach I outlined earlier this year, to use force against anyone who threatens America's core interests, but to mobilize partners wherever possible to address broader challenges to international order. My fellow Americans, we live in a time of great change. Tomorrow marks 13 years since our country was attacked. Next week marks 6 years since our economy suffered its worst setback since the Great Depression. Yet, despite these shocks, through the pain we felt and the grueling work required to bounce back, America is better positioned today to seize the future than any other nation on Earth. Our technology companies and universities are unmatched. Our manufacturing and auto industries are thriving. Energy independence is closer than it's been in decades. For all the work that remains, our businesses are in the longest uninterrupted stretch of job creation in our history. Despite all the divisions and discord within our democracy, I see the grit and determination and common goodness of the American people every single day. And that makes me more confident than ever about our country's future. A broad American leadership is the one constant in an uncertain world. It is America that has the capacity and the will to mobilize the world against terrorists. It is America that has rallied the world against Russian aggression and in support of the Ukrainian people's right to determine their own destiny. It is America, our scientists, our doctors, our know-how that can help contain and cure the outbreak of Ebola. It is America that helped remove and destroy Syria's declared chemical weapons so that they can't pose a threat to the Syrian people or the world again. And it is America that is helping Muslim communities around the world, not just in the fight against terrorism, but in the fight for opportunity and tolerance and a more hopeful future. America, our endless blessings bestow an enduring burden. But as Americans, we welcome our responsibility to lead. From Europe to Asia, from the far reaches of Africa to war-torn capitals of the Middle East, we stand for freedom, for justice, for dignity. These are values that have guided our nation since its founding. Tonight, I ask for your support in carrying that leadership forward. I do so as a Commander-in-Chief who could not be prouder of our men and women in uniform. Pilots who bravely fly in the face of danger above the Middle East, and service members who support our partners on the ground. When we helped prevent the massacre of civilians trapped on a distant mountain, here's what one of them said. "We owe our American friends our lives. Our children will always remember that there was someone who felt our struggle and made a long journey to protect innocent people." That is the difference we make in the world. And our own safety, our own security, depends upon our willingness to do what it takes to defend this nation and uphold the values that we stand for. Timeless ideals that will endure long after those who offer only hate and destruction have been vanquished from the earth. May God bless our troops, and may God bless the United States of America.
As the president made clear his plans to take action against targets in Syria without consulting with the Syrian government, Staffan de Mistura, the new UN envoy on Syria, called for a political solution to the crisis there. We have this report from Press TV.
A new UN envoy in Syria says that the world must confront terrorist groups there and beyond, but the country also needs a political solution. Staffan de Mistura made the comments after meeting with Syria's President Bashar al-Assad on his first trip to Damascus. Mistura also referred to the UN Security Council's resolution, which calls for action against militant groups like the ISIL. He said terrorist groups pose a threat to the Middle East and elsewhere. The Italian diplomat was appointed after the resignation of his predecessor, Lakhdar Brahimi.
Russia's foreign ministry said if the U.S. were to attack targets in Syria without the permission of the Syrian government, it would be a violation of international law. We have this report from RT.
Washington could be violating international law if it acts in Syria, something pointed out by Russia's foreign ministry. RT's Medina Korchenova joins me live now for more on the reaction to a possible U.S. attack. Medina, what are the concerns from the Kremlin?
Well, Russia's foreign ministry says that launching airstrikes on the territory of Syria without any official approval coming from Damascus and with a no UN decision will be regarded as an act of aggression against this country and will also be seen as a major violation of the international law. Now, Russia has warned that these strikes would also amount to a colossal escalation of the conflict in the Middle East. And the ministry also adds that there are once again fears that these strikes will not only be used to attack the Islamic State positions, but also against the government forces to further undermine the current regime of the Syrian government. Now, Moscow says that it supports the fact that the U.S. has finally understood the scale of the conflict that has captured almost all of the Middle East region and says that no decision should be made without the permission of the Syrian authorities.
Iran shares a long border with Iraq on its west and Afghanistan on its east and has witnessed up close the results of U.S. intervention in those two countries. Tehran expressed serious doubts about the prospects for the so-called international coalition being assembled by the U.S. with the claimed purpose of fighting the group known as ISIL, ISIS, or the Islamic State, pointing to a number of contradictions facing some of the coalition's members. We have this report from Press TV.
Iran's foreign ministry spokeswoman, Marzia Afram, said that some member states of the U.S.-led coalition are among the main financial and military supporters of insurgents in Iraq and Syria. She noted that the double standards of these countries in dealing with extremism have contributed to the growing terrorism in different parts of the world. Afram also rejects as baseless any report that Iran and the U.S. are in talks on fighting the Takfiri militants. She emphasized that the two sides' talks in Geneva are limited to Tehran's nuclear program.
There were also doubts about the U.S. mission being expressed by China. Li Guofu is the director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the China Institute of International Studies. He spoke with the Chinese news agency CCTV Thursday.
In Iraq, it will be very easy because the American mission and has been invited by the Iraqi legitimate government and was supported by almost, you know, the regional countries or all, you know, the Iraqi peoples. Mm-hmm. And on the ground, you know, American provided air cover to airstrike these forces and also to assist, you know, the Iraqi forces or the Kurdish forces on the ground to retake some very important strategic cities or positions. But in Syria, I think, you know, it's very different issues. And because it involved a kind of international law and the Syria's and sovereignty, and from the legal point, without the proof of the Syrian government, and any, you know, military action in Syria will be regarded as against or violate of international law. I think this is very important serious issues. Obama has to make to consider about that. What, you know, the reaction of the international community?
Ryan Becker is a coordinator with the Answer Coalition. He spoke with RT shortly after the president's speech Wednesday night.
The Obama administration tonight said that they have the right to strike forces, whomever they declare to be the enemy in Syria, without the consent of the Syrian government. In fact, they made it clear that they won't work with the Syrian government. That's a violation of international law. The U.S. government has no right whatsoever to arrogate to itself the right to use force in Syria, a country that is technically at peace with the United States. I think even moreover, what we've seen here is a dishonest presentation to the American people. The Obama administration is laying the basis for the reintervention of direct military forces by the United States into Syria. And it's become quite clear in the recent years that the Syrian opposition, the armed opposition, which includes the Islamic State, can't defeat the Assad government without direct foreign military intervention. I think that's the great danger, or one of the great dangers, with Obama's speech tonight.
Well, Obama also said that he is the authorization necessary for the action. But what about congressional approval? Doesn't he need to actually ask for that and get it?
Well, yes, and of course, Congress actually doesn't want to have a vote because the in spite of what you hear in the U.S. mass media, the American people are really opposed to any new war in Syria or in Iraq. Matter of fact, that's why Obama has to ridiculously promise that there won't be any boots on the ground. It's an existential threat to America, but there won't be any troops sent because he's telling the American people, we won't have any bleeding done on our side. Only Iraqis or Syrians will bleed. But in Congress, the Congress people don't want to vote. Of course, it's their congressional obligation. The U.S. Constitution says, and it should be quite clear, that only Congress can declare war. And this is a declaration of war, whether you call it that or not. When you go and bomb another country, kill its people, that's a declaration of war, in fact.
And what we've just heard from the president, he's very firm in his intentions about what he wants to do. He wants to go after Islamic State in Iraq and Syria if necessary. Could the U.S. bomb Islamic State positions without a U.N. resolution, though?
Right. The United States is now conveniently ignoring the United Nations because they know the United Nations, both in the Security Council and the General Assembly, will not accept the U.S. right to do this again. The Obama administration has proclaimed itself tonight the fourth straight U.S. presidential administration to say, I am going to bomb Iraq. They did it in the first Bush administration, then Clinton, then the next Bush administration, and now Obama. Each time the pretext is noble. It's to fight terrorism or to stop weapons of mass destruction or to stop Islamic extremism. The fact of the matter is, and I think the world knows and the UN knows, that we would not be in this crisis right now if the United States had not fractured Iraq, had not fractured Libya, and had not fueled a civil war in Syria that gives rise to this kind of jihadist extremism as exemplified by the Islamic State.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar, New York. Thanks for listening.